Welcome to Tech It to the Limit, the humorous and surprisingly informative podcast that makes digital innovation in healthcare as entertaining as it is relevant. I'm Sarah Harper.
And I'm Elliot Wilson. And we're here to pull back the curtain on the world of digital transformation in healthcare.
Don't worry, you don't need a medical degree to join in on the fun. Just a sense of humor and a penchant for all things health tech.
So buckle up, folks. It's time to
Tech It to the Limit.
What's up, Elliot?
What's up, Sarah? It is episode 1 of season 2.
Wow, good job getting those in the right order.
Thank you.
We are back. This is very exciting.
I can't believe it. It's been months.
It has been months. It feels like I need to put my podcast training wheels back on.
You're doing a great job so far.
So far, 30 seconds in. Crushing it.
Well, welcome back to season 2 of Tech It to the Limit, folks. We're so grateful to have you here. It's been a couple of months off for Sarah and me, and we are back and better than ever.
Yeah, we are. We are absolutely. I was going to say, you look better than ever. What have you been up to? Oh,
thank you. Thank you. Well, I just got back from LA, where I had an amazing time at Vive.
Awesome.
Kicking off the spring conference season, so that was really, really exciting.
Golf clap.
Yes, it was a lot of fun. I didn't enjoy the red eye back, but I really enjoyed the conference. It was an incredible few days. The people were amazing. The people watching was even better. The energy at that conference is just fantastic. Just lots of people that are really excited to kind of fix the healthcare mess that we have put ourselves in. So I really enjoyed it.
Awesome. What were some of your takeaways? Oh, wait, we don't call them that on the show. Sorry.
No, we don't.
What were some of the nuggets that you noshed on later on your red eye home?
Mm.
Ooh, nice water bottle.
So,
product placement.
Product placement.
It says Vive on it.
I got to say, it was on fleek to be disillusioned with AI at this conference.
We're entering the valley of despair.
That's right. We're nowhere near the slope of enlightenment at this point. But for sure, everybody is kind of like disillusioned. It was really hot, really heavy. And now everybody's kind of like, they're kind of getting wise to ready for this. This was one of the fun phrases I heard. Everybody's kind of getting wise to the shiny hammer syndrome.
Shiny hammer syndrome. How does that differ from the shiny object syndrome?
But a hammer is you buy the hammer and then you go looking for nails. So it's the shiny hammer syndrome.
Oh my gosh, that is such a good little analogy. I love.
Isn't that great?
Yeah.
New three-letter acronyms.
Ooh,
abounded.
All right.
One of my favorites was measurement-based care.
Ugh, barf in my mouth. Sorry.
It's not value-based care. It's not fee-for-service. It's measurement-based care.
What exactly are they measuring?
Well, I assume outcomes,
but
it wasn't entirely clear.
How high this stack of money is growing on my desk.
Yeah, for sure. But I got to say, I was actually surprised that there weren't a lot of new players out there. It was a lot of the same technology that's been out there. You know, a lot of folks trying to just the same thing that they have, and they just slapped AI on the side of it.
Ooh.
For a lot of vendors. So I was kind of surprised by that. I did see some new fun startups that I liked that I won't go into them on this show, but they were pretty cool ones, but not a ton new from the big players.
Mm. So it's like the senior prom. You've seen it all before. You've been there, done that.
Yeah, kind of. Maybe I'm just jaded. But two other things real quickly. One, there is no one way to create an innovation shop.
Mm.
So I thought there was some really cool panels from provider organizations that are trying to figure out how to create an innovation shop and mold innovation into their business strategy. Mm. And there's lots of different models. And I thought that was pretty neat.
Mm-hmm.
But the other thing was ROI, 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 ROI. Nobody is looking to buy. Providers are not looking to buy new technology. VC is not looking to give money to new technology until you can show and prove an ROI and quickly. So that was a real big takeaway. And let's not look at AI to replace clinicians. Let's look at AI to find the lowest hanging fruit, fruit that is essentially on the ground that you can walk around and pick up. Can we talk about prior authorization, right? So, you know, those were some of my biggest takeaways from the show.
Awesome. That's great to hear. And it's kind of interesting that we're already entering that like phase of disillusionment with AI. You and I both work in this space. And I think the shiny hammer syndrome is the best description I have heard of sort of this overabundance of tech. Mm-hmm. And it's not, I don't want to just like paint it black for AI. I think the market is pretty well saturated with solutions right now. So anyway, yeah, I appreciate your sharing that. You know, I hope you enjoyed the spring fling. That is five. You know,
that is exactly what it was. That's exactly what it was.
For the season.
It was. But nothing could get me more excited than our first guest that we have on season two of Tech It to the Limit. We have Dr. Geeta Nair, who is a former CMO of AT&T and Salesforce. Brilliant doctor. Started at the forefront of when we were just transitioning to EMRs, really got into tech, had a lot of really fantastic learnings. Talked about her new book, Dead Wrong.
Wait. We talked about her new book?
Oh, I thought we were going to, but something was missing in our interview. So I can't put my finger on it. What was it?
It's me. Hi, I'm the problem. It's me.
Where were you? What happened?
You know, I was otherwise indisposed. The real reason for my absence shall not be disclosed on this podcast, because I feel like it would be very shaming to us both. But I just want to say that if anyone feels like scrolling through LinkedIn and checking out the Tech It to the Limit page this month, you can answer the poll question, where in the world was Sarah Harper during Dr. G's interview? You can cast your vote on LinkedIn later this month.
Here are some of the options. Where was she? She was, thanks to her mad joystick skills, she got tapped to pilot the Odysseus lunar lander. Thank you, Atari 80s, for finally paying dividends. Or maybe she was munching down on a Big Mac. Or maybe I lost another embarrassing bet. Or maybe AI still hasn't solved time zones and we're both working parents and really tired all the time and calendars that don't sync on their own. So thanks, Google and Microsoft. We really appreciate it. So you pick, listeners, where was Sarah during the great Dr. G interview?
Okay, listeners. Well, this has been super fun catching up with you, Elliot. We're going to pause for a quick break from one of our fake sponsors. Emphasis on the fake for all you listeners out there. I know they're convincing, but they're not real sponsors.
Yeah, take a listen. Listen to them for real.
And then we're going to come back. We have a very special guest for our next segment. We are actually going to be hearing from the great-grandfather of ChatGPT. Stick around.
We'll be right back.
Calling Dr. Good Old Days, are you sick and tired of the technology layer cake? You know the one. Workflows where endless pop-ups alert you faster than a strobe light at your middle school mixer? Well, have we got a treat for you. Picture this, you're neck deep in the quagmire of meaningful use documentation, caught somewhere between patient-reported outcomes and medication reconciliation, and longing for the simplicity of pen and paper. Fear not, because Tech Trasher is your lifeline out of this tech spiral. Tech Trasher is an ingenious tool that lets you wield a powerful yet utterly satisfying lightsaber and erase the unnecessary technological clutter faster than you can say, shibba-cadabra. Say hasta la vista, baby, to clunky interfaces, endless clicks, and doom scrolling through the labyrinth of seemingly endless digitized health information. And hello and hallelujah to the sweet serenity of college-ruled paper and manila file folders. With Tech Trasher, you can reclaim your workspace and rediscover the joy of practicing medicine without the digital migraine. So grab your lightsaber and join the tech trashing revolution today. Because sometimes the best solution is to hit the eradicate button and go back to basics. Visit our website at www.givemepaperorgivemedeath.help and take the first step towards putting the joy back in medicine. Enter the code SKYWALKER for a 30-minute free trial. Tech Trasher is not recommended for anyone born after 1980. We do, however, recommend asking for forgiveness and not permission from your CIO before purchasing. HIPAA compliance and executive functioning skills not guaranteed. Throwback file cabinets sold separately.
Well, welcome back to Tech It to the Limit. Here we are again. We have a special new friend with us for the first time. It is the great, 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 great grandparent of ChatGPT. Who do we have with us as a guest, Sarah?
The Magic 8 Ball. All right.
So how does this work? So what are we doing and how does this work, Sarah?
If you don't, well, you're an elder millennial, so you do know. But if you aren't an elder millennial, then we will explain it to you. The Magic 8 Ball can answer any question you ask it as long as it's a yes or no question and you're okay with a vague, non-specific, and unhelpful answer. So this Magic 8 Ball is not magic. It's a floaty thing inside some liquid, inside an oversized 8 Ball. But
sounds exactly like ChatGPT.
Yeah, that's, you know, So Elliot, you and I are going to take turns asking ChatGPT's great-great-great-great-grandfather some questions about the future of the healthcare industry. How's that sound?
Sounds amazing. I cannot wait to do it. You're going to do the first question or do I?
You choose.
Oh, thank you.
Friends first.
Very good. Magic 8 Ball. Will provider organizations ever figure out how to tap the data goldmine of patient wearables?
You may rely on it. Yay! Praise!
Thank goodness!
Hallelujah, we're saved.
Now we just got to figure out when the data comes in, whether it was actually the person wearing it or their great-grandson who was wearing it for the day
star.
And screwed up all the data that feeds, you know?
And do we have a signed release of information form for that person?
Yeah, right.
Anywho. All right, I'm going to ask the next question.
Go.
Is healthcare single-handedly keeping the fax machine alive? Thanks, Dr. G, for that one. Cannot predict now. Again, unhelpful.
Unhelpful. So unhelpful. But honestly, can we just say, get rid of the fax machines? Don't you think it's
time? I think
time?
We can say that. It's whether or not that the people in charge of the fax machines can actually do the things necessary to stop using them, right? Like learn how to use the internet.
Do you think that CFOs have stock in Xerox?
Is Xerox still in existence?
Or Ricoh?
Ricoh sounds like a really tough dog name. No, I think this is actually a really good question, Elliot, because I think it points to just such a classic example of how difficult it is to implement technological change in healthcare. If there are people still using fax machines and pagers, which there are millions still using fax machines and pagers, and it's not for lack of internet or 5G network, it happens in a city near you, okay? Then that's evidence that it's extremely difficult.
I agree.
To implement change through technology in our industry.
For sure. All right. Magic 8 Ball. I am a surgeon.
No, you're not. You're a podcast host.
I am a podcast host and a surgeon, and I don't like robots. Will I become obsolete?
It's decidedly so.
Oh!
Adapt or die. I added that for effect.
You heard it here, folks. You heard it here. Get on your Da Vinci or get out of the game.
Who said that, though? Like, innovate or die? That's a thing, right? It's something I learned at business school, for sure.
Everything I learned in business school, I learned in the kindergarten.
In the kindergarten. I love it. Like, always use your definite articles in an awkward manner. All right. Magic 8-Ball is CMS. That's Centers for Medicaid and Medicare Services. Centers is plural. Learned that the hard way. Is CMS going to run out of money before I retire? Which hopefully will be soon. Don't count on it. All right.
All right.
I'm going to have some freaking benefits.
All right. That's fantastic.
Great news. I'm just going to go out and spend my whole nest egg now just because 8-Ball said that I'll be covered.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Thank goodness. I mean, I don't know what to do now because I started a health savings account when I was 3. So, like, what do I do with that now?
I think you should go on a vacation. Maybe. And maybe we should send a case of Magic 8-Balls to the Congressional Budget Office and they'll have it all figured out.
And better than the decisions they're making now.
Okay.
All right, Magic 8-Ball, Magic 8-Ball, Magic 8-Ball. Will someone ever develop an app that integrates with the EHR and is user-friendly?
Very doubtful.
Yeah, kind of agree.
Sad but true. I feel like I change my voice when I'm speaking as the Magic 8-Ball. Are you picking up on that?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, super fun. It's like the Darth Vader that's been, you know, unleashed. Okay, Magic 8-Ball, Magic 8-Ball. Did Obamacare actually help improve access and affordability?
Outlook good.
For all you Democrats out there, Obamacare will one day have a positive connotation. Sorry.
Maybe. Magic 8-Ball. I have a sore throat. Do I need to be seen by a clinician?
It is certain. Go to the emergency room.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Well, if CMS is going to pay for it, right? Who cares? Yeah.
Ooh, okay. Let's not go down that debate rabbit hole. All right. Magic 8-Ball, Magic 8-Ball. Will policymakers ever grow a pair and invest in solutions that solve social determinants of health, like schools and gardens?
It is certain.
Yet another good decision that's definitely coming out of Washington. I'm pumped.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I feel like that's something that's going to have to wait until the octogenarians aren't there anymore.
Good word. Word drop.
And, like, maybe after the boomers are gone, we might invest in things like that because we need some millennials in power. But
I think you're, like, borderline stereotyping right now, dude.
I'm not, like, trying to be ageist. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying that values are different between generations.
Slow nod. In agreement.
Generally. Yeah. All right. Magic 8-Ball. Magic 8-Ball. Will AI replace me?
Cannot predict now.
Ooh, I don't like that answer.
I love your face.
Ooh, that makes me really nervous. When can you predict that, Magic 8-Ball? Oh my goodness.
I only can do yes or no questions.
All right, Magic 8-Ball, fine. I mean, I don't think AI is going to replace us, period. I think that, right, I think it's pretty hip to say AI will not replace you, but people that use AI will replace you. Right?
Yep. That's like the YOLO of this year. I don't know when YOLO was the thing, but like everyone was saying it. And I'm like, yeah, we know, okay? Yeah. Like, but it seems like everybody is saying that.
It's true.
I'm guilty. I've said it a time or two, you know, in the elevator.
You got to say something.
You're trapped with somebody that you can't talk about the weather anymore. Okay.
Right.
Last question. Magic 8-Ball. Magic 8-Ball. Is Arnold Schwarzenegger coming for us all?
Yes. Definitely.
Oh my gosh. My Magic 8-Ball said the same thing.
No way.
He's definitely coming. So it doesn't really matter if CMS is going to pay for my benefits.
I think that's actually more likely that he's coming for us than CMS paying for everything.
Right? So true. All right. Oh, that was my gosh. Fun. Hey, I think it's time to hear from another one of our fake sponsors.
Oh, I love it. Well, stick around, everybody, for Tech It to the Limit. When we come back to the show, it will have our interview with Dr. Geeta Nair. Dr. G. Tech It to the Limit is proudly sponsored by Paper Porter, the indispensable ally for virtual nursing teams everywhere. Imagine a scenario. It's in the middle of the night, and you're deep into an overnight shift at your virtual nursing command center. You're dedicated, you're focused, and you're out of toilet paper. That's right, even heroes need to go. But with Paper Porter, that's one less worry on your list. Paper Porter is not your ordinary office supply robot. It's a dedicated AI-powered companion designed to ensure that virtual nursing teams have everything they need when they need it, especially toilet paper. With features like origami mode, transforming your essential supplies into art, and a panic button for those urgent moments, Paper Porter adds a layer of comfort and care to your hard-working nights. But the real magic? Mood-based TP dispensing. Whether you're feeling stressed, overworked, or just need a laugh, Paper Porter's advanced AI detects your mood and dispenses exactly what you need to get through the night. Sometimes it's a good joke, and sometimes it's extra soft toilet paper. For listeners of Tech It to the Limit, we've got an exclusive offer that rolls out the red carpet. Sign up for Paper Porter with the promo code TECHCOMFORT, and you'll receive a special edition Paper Porter unit that includes a year's supply of our premium eco-friendly toilet paper. Take care of the planet while you're taking care of business. Remember, with Paper Porter by your side, you're never alone on those long shifts. It's the little things that keep us going, and Paper Porter is here to ensure that those things are always within reach. Side effects of Paper Porter may include a sudden and intense interest in origami, leading to unexpected paper art installations throughout the command center. Paper Porter is not responsible for any anthropomorphization of the device leading to naming your Paper Porter and including in team photos, holiday cards, and as a beneficiary in your will. Paper Porter. Keep your virtual nursing team on a roll.
Well, greeting listeners and welcome back to Tech It to the Limit. We're so excited for our first episode of the season. This is our return with season two of Tech It to the Limit featuring the one, the only, Dr. Geeta Nair, known affectionately by her fans as Dr. G. She is a globally recognized healthcare technology leader, the author of the Wall Street Journal best-selling book, Dead Wrong, Diagnosing and Treating Healthcare's Misinformation Illness. It's a post-pandemic look at the rise of misinformation in the digital age, and I have to say, a fantastic book that I just finished reading recently. She's widely sought after thought leader and appeared on multiple media outlets such as CNBC, CNN, CBS, and Yahoo Finance. She is a true health tech grand slam. But she doesn't just expose industry problems. Dr. G serves up digitally enabled solutions with the ease of a Williams sister returning Sarah Harper's backhand. Welcome, Geeta. May I call you Geeta?
Of course, of course. Thanks for having me, Elliot. Do you play tennis? I have to ask because
We don't play tennis. I don't play tennis, but we do research our guests and we try to make our introduction special for them. So I hope that landed.
It did. It did. I loved it. I loved it. Thank you for that. That was very cute.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks for joining us. We like to ask all of our guests on Tech It to the Limit as a first question, get it out there. What's your favorite dad joke?
Oh my gosh. Well, first of all, you have not met my dad. I love my dad, but I have so many dad jokes. Now you're going to make me pick one. Well, let me give you some context before I tell you the joke. So my mother is triple trained, board certified in ophthalmology, OBGYN, internal medicine, started hem-onc, but had me and dropped out of hem-onc. My dad is an ICU pulmonary critical care doc, 81 years old, still rounds in the unit. So when I call my parents in my late 20s, like early 30s, to tell them that I was going to be the doctor for, you know, the chief medical officer at AT&T, I literally heard like the phone drop when my dad, like when I gave my dad this news. And it was because my dad was like, okay, so me and your mother immigrated to America. we went through not just one training, to come to the US, you got to train all over again, put you through medical school, put you through college, got you in, and now you work for the phone company. He's like, I would like a refund. He's like, I don't know why we came to America for this. Like, needless to say, my dad has no idea what I do to this day.
It was West Virginia they immigrated to, right?
Yeah.
So it's like, first we go to West Virginia, then we're in Miami, we go through all of this, and you're telling me you're not even going to round on patients like I do all my life.
Very, very much, yes. And I actually, you know, what's interesting is I just did the opening keynote for the American Hospital Association Rural Health Conference,
yeah,
literally 2 years ago. And I opened with that. I said, listen, my family owes our beginning in America to rural health, because in the 1970s, there was a huge physician shortage in rural America. So my parents got their green card to come to Beckley, West Virginia and practice. And that was actually where I was born.
Yeah.
I mentioned.
Yeah, I know. I was reading. I mean, the book is full of really personal stories like that I thoroughly enjoyed reading. So I feel like I got to know your family a little bit, and your daughter as well. So that's really special. Thank you so much for sharing that. Well, let's just jump right into some of the questions. We've got a few here that we'd love to go over with you. So you mentioned AT&T. So you began your career in medicine, but then you eventually made this leap to be CMO at Salesforce and AT&T. I mean, these are two giants in their respective fields. So tell us about your journey, why you decided to move toward technology and away from, I wouldn't say away from medicine, but, you know, as a primary focus, move toward technology, and what lessons can healthcare professionals learn from the technology world in their practice?
You bet. So first of all, it was a complete happenstance, right? Because I went to medical school because I love science, I love medicine, I love patients. That continues to be my passion. So I trained at a time when in our residency, we went from paper to digital. So the whole EHR kind of transition and move happened to my class of medical students and residents. And so very much firsthand, I saw paper, what paper can do, and I saw what tech could do. And they didn't always line up, right, as we continue to see today. So there were benefits, there were pros and cons to both. But really what launched my career in health tech was being in the right place at the right time. It was at George Washington University, which was an Allscripts site at the time, the first Allscripts site in the ambulatory side. And I remember everyone hating it. The doctors hated it. The patients hated it. Like, it was just a hot mess. And I was just this bright-eyed, bushy-tailed doctor who saw the future, right? I was like, this is going to be analytics. This is going to be telemedicine. This is going to be how we communicate. Like, I saw it all very clearly. And I walked over to the CIO's office, and I literally knocked on the door, and I was like, hey, I know you don't know me, but I'm Dr. G. I'm in the medicine department. And here's the thing. Like, I think I know what you guys are trying to do with this thing, but you're just doing it, like, so backwards, and everybody hates it. And I could help you. I know why they hate it. Like, it's messing up the workflow. No one wants their patients in their eyes anymore.
And yeah, this is before, like, the rise of physician informaticists.
This doesn't even exist. You know? Yeah, this was just, that's how the EHR revolution started. It was nothing. It was just tech being thrown at doctors and nurses. So this CIO was amazing. And he was just like, I have been waiting for a doctor like you. Come on in. And that was really the launch of my career. But it was very much from this place of just good medicine. Like, I felt mm-hmm. like good medicine could happen. But it was this huge disconnect between technology and healthcare delivery.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome. And so then you're in these large organizations, these, you know, very tech forward organizations at this point now. And how have you seen them approach technological problems and engagement with their customers that are lessons that you would take back to the healthcare delivery organizations to say, if you thought about customers or consumers differently, you know, this is how you might accelerate your velocity or something like that. I mean, I'm making that up, but what do you think?
So all of these big tech companies, all of the retailers, all of these new companies or new entrants to healthcare that we see, the biggest asset they bring is they understand customers. They understand customer service. They understand how to do customer acquisition, retention, build brand loyalty in this way that healthcare just doesn't know. Right. We talk about the patient. They talk about before you're my consumer, before you're my patient. How am I getting in front of you? How am I building brand trust, loyalty, et cetera? So I think that's probably the biggest thing that healthcare can learn from a lot of these companies. They also have very deep pockets and very big visions as a result. And they see the opportunity in healthcare, which is incredibly exciting. On the flip side, what healthcare delivery can teach some of these companies is healthcare, because that's really where we've seen the lack of success in these new entrants to healthcare. Is it's the closer you can get to the patient, the closer you can get to the doctor and the care team, that's really the places where you make the biggest difference, right? And just like the what I was describing to you, even in the EHR space, we didn't understand that. The industry that came to medicine didn't understand that. They understood tech, but they had no idea that they may have solved one problem and created five new ones. Whereas any doctor or nurse could have told you, if you do this, you're going to do that. And so that's where we have to, as an industry, now we have enough lessons learned. And as we think about particularly artificial intelligence, the closer you can get to the patient, the closer you get to the doctor and the nurse, who are the closest to the patients, that is where you will find the answers. And so having that clinical leadership bought in early, being part of the strategy, the building of products, product implementation, it's just so critical throughout the whole entire process.
You know, we've talked about that on this pod before, about it is that special patient-physician relationship, that clinical encounter moment, how close can you get to that is where the magic happens. And I think that's kind of what you're getting at here. You really got to zero in to those moments of interaction and be able to scale it too. That's a really great nugget of wisdom to share for both sides to each other. So that's great. Thank you. I kind of want to talk about your book, if that's all right. One of your first stories that you started with was around the AIDS epidemic from the 80s. And it's personal to me for a couple of different reasons. One, I'm a gay man that was coming into my own right as an adult, mid-90s to the early 2000s. The other reason is my uncle died of AIDS right around that exact same time. But it was a very personal beginning to the book for me. So I was kind of gripped right from the beginning.
Yeah, Elliot, thanks for sharing that.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you for including that as one of the first stories. I found that patient story to be very moving. Your book starts with kind of like a framing of the question and then moves into, well, what the heck can we do about it in the latter chapters? And that's kind of where I want to focus this part of the conversation here.
Sure. You know, I want to start with the patient Jerome, especially for your audience who maybe, you know, doesn't have the context. But the reason I wrote this book is really because I trained at a time, I was in my residency in Washington, D.C., and it was the height of the HIV/AIDS epidemic. And you have to understand, especially as a newly minted doctor, I mean, you are just so gung-ho about patient care and you're all about saving lives. And why would you not be, right? And at that time, literally every other patient that walked into the emergency room was what I described as walking dead. Right? Like there was nothing you could do. They would walk in with full-blown AIDS and then they would die like 2 weeks later, 1 week later, like very little time, right? And all of us, the physicians, the residents, the nurses, it was such a demoralizing time that every other patient you saw, like, and they'd walk in, you'd see them and you knew they were going to die shortly after, right? So you can only imagine the traumatic sort of piece to that. And what really struck you, especially as a young 20-something-year-old, was that these were preventable deaths, right? These were people who were misinformed, disinformed. Their church told them this, their politicians told them this. And it was exactly what you said. There was so much confusion about the science. And there was so much confusion. When I mentioned the patient Jerome, there was so much confusion about, well, I'm not gay. How could I possibly have AIDS, right? So people were dying this death that was so preventable. And at that time, Elliot, all of our attendings, all of our professors told us, you're going to remember this time. It's a once in a lifetime thing. And you're going to be better doctors. You're going to end up becoming better doctors, right? So got through that period in life and history. Here we were March 2020. I'm seeing patients at University of Miami. And what are we telling our medical students and our residents? This is a once in a lifetime pandemic. And yes, we know there's a lot of confusion. We know there's a lot of preventable deaths. It was such a deja vu moment for me that this is why I wrote the book. Right?
So, yeah.
Hey, this fire, somebody keeps setting this fire in healthcare, whether it's fertility confusion, whether it's confusion about vaccines, confusion about you name it. There is someone that's got ginger, turmeric, or supplement they're happy to sell you. Right. And that's where the cultural piece comes in. that's where the cultural piece comes in, because if you don't understand the cultural lens by which people receive and relate to science and information, that's the disconnect. And in the HIV/AIDS population at that time, it was primarily the African-American community and church that, you know, had a certain angle, had a certain, this is how, you know, this is what is important about your behavior, and this is what will protect you against this disease, right? COVID was very similar. And so understanding that, and then healthcare in general, you know, healthcare in general, look, people, science is confusing. So many things are confusing in life, but science can be confusing if you don't have a science background. So we have to do a better job as healthcare leaders, making it relatable and reachable. And there's nothing wrong, Elliot, right, with saying, look, I'm an Asian woman. I prefer to talk to an Asian woman. I mean, the number one question I get when I go to my daughter's school is, hey, Dr. G, do you have a female OBGYN you recommend? Do you know a male urologist that my husband could see, right? So there's nothing wrong with that. And
no, I mean, sorry to interrupt you there, but from my perspective, I'm on the hunt for an LGBTQ physician for my PCP, for my next PCP, because they're going to understand things about me and my life that are going to make for better clinical care.
That's exactly it. And so healthcare at the enterprise level, we have to start doing that. We have to understand that the digital apertures are there. The technology is not the problem, but how are we deploying them differently in different communities and making sure that we hit those human factors? Because if we don't, it just goes over your head, right? It goes over the head of the consumer, and it leads to this propagation, or it leads them to places that they feel do relate and understand them that are perhaps not science forward and not and also not accountable for their care, right? So if I'm going to give you advice, I also am accountable to you as your physician or a physician in the world talking about these things.
So yeah, I think that is spot on. Culturally competent care it's not just about how do I medically take care of you better, but also how do I communicate about science, about medicine to you, because that's going to have an impact on your ability to absorb that. That kind of falls into that same concept around health literacy, just in general. So in your book, you delve into that rise of misinformation in the digital age and its impact specifically on patient health literacy. Help us define health literacy for our listeners and share some practical strategies that healthcare organizations can use to navigate that landscape.
So to me, health literacy, and you know, there's that adage, right? You can feed a man a fish for a day, or you can teach a man how to fish and feed them for a lifetime, right? That to me is what health literacy is. It is empowering the everyday person to be able to have a certain fundamental knowledge about their health and then have the ability to interpret health information to make good decisions, right? Ideally in partnership with the doctor, but you know, in everyday world to know what is the right way and what are the right sources to find information. In the book, chapter 8 in particular, I used a use case from the Cleveland Clinic. Cleveland Clinic's chief marketing officer, Paul Mattson, felt that there was an issue with the Cleveland Clinic's trust, particularly in the local community. And he said, what do we do best as the Cleveland Clinic? It's our docs. Surprise, surprise. By the way, every healthcare organization should feel the same way, because truly it's about the talent, the doctors, the nurses, the care team. So he said, how do I get that out there in the world? And he went and he talked with his clinical leaders and he said, look, you guys do this every day. You're talking about colonoscopies, mammograms, all this stuff. And we have Black doctors, we have white doctors, we have Asian doctors. Let me put them on camera. I'll make sure they comb their hair, but I'm not going to ask my doctors to be marketers. This is probably perhaps one of his beautiful things he first acknowledges. I'm not going to ask them to be marketers. I'm not going to ask them to learn TikTok. I'm going to do all that. I'm the marketing officer. I'm just going to turn the camera on, let them be doctors, figure out what they talk about every day, what makes them tick, what are the top three things they think every patient should know in XYZ specialty. And then he developed this partnership with YouTube, and he started to make these evidence-based facts snackable, what I call snackable, like relatable. And, you know, and again, in the attention span of today, right, the 30 seconds or less thing you need to know today about mammograms. And he did this in such a beautiful way that his clinical staff didn't do anything except these clinicians. And marketing did their part and scaled this at an enterprise level. And it drove appointments. It drove appointments. It drove brand loyalty. It drove patient acquisition and retention. And that is the ideal strategy for an enterprise. It is that cross C-suite partnership with clinical leadership, marketing, the CIO. So it's the CMO, the CIO, and the other CMO, the medical officer, tying it all together. Because at the end of the day, every organization is driving patient acquisition, retention, and brand loyalty, whether you're a life sciences company, a payer, or a provider. And so that is really what I thought was brilliant about the Cleveland Clinic's approach, was that they let everyone stay in their lane, but then they tied it together to this enterprise level of really driving trust, which is what everyone's trying to do in healthcare.
Yeah, I think that's wonderful. And the results clearly speak for themselves. I mean, even before Cleveland Clinic was well known and respected, but now locally, they're trusted. And I think that's really, really important. And I love the idea of a snackable education content. On this podcast, we call them nuggets of learning, little learning nuggets that we like to snack on. So love that concept.
No one's reading medical journals, Elliot, right? So I guess I want to.
I mean, I am, but I'm a dweeb.
You're a super dweeb. So my point is, health literacy should not be reading the New England Journal of Medicine.
Right.
It should be snackable. It should be in third grade to sixth grade level language. And it should be done in a fun, engaging, inspiring way, right? Yeah. That to me is, I mean, and that is what we're competing with. 59 million Americans turn to social media for healthcare decisions because those apertures are relatable, snackable, reachable, inspiring. So if healthcare organizations are not in that space, we leave this huge gap open for mis and disinformation to thrive. That's perhaps the biggest takeaway or lesson learned is the Cleveland Clinic said, I'm going to partner with YouTube. YouTube's where it's at. I recognize that's where my consumer is, right? Yeah. And YouTube also said, you know what? You guys are the science nerds. Break it down for us, right? Why not? It's a magical partnership, and more of us need to do that. 59 million Americans turn to social media influencers for their health information.
That's insane. They are not
talking to their doctor. They may not even have a doctor, right? And they're not going to just Google. They are going to TikTok. They're going to YouTube. They're going to Instagram, right?
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. Absolutely. I think you're exactly right. Be where they are. Don't try to get them to come to you. Be where they are. Be in front of them where they are. So that's fantastic.
Look, we created an amazing historic mRNA vaccine in 9 months flat around the globe. And then what happened? We couldn't get anyone to take it. We spent so much more time and energy trying to win the trust of the everyday consumer around the globe to take the vaccine. That was a miss. We should have known that from the beginning, knowing everything we know about anti-vaccine sentiments. It was a complete miss to create an innovation in the lab, but not be able to make it a reality in reality, right? Fast enough and in time. And so in many ways, that was such a perfect example of where science misses. We're really good at the science stuff, but it's humanity. It's that last mile. That's what makes the difference. That's what gets the science in the hands of the people that need it. And we have to start doing it in parallel. We have to understand that we will continue to innovate. And the organizations that do this in parallel and really understand the human factor, they're going to be successful with AI. They're going to be successful with social media. They're going to be successful with brand loyalty and patient acquisition and retention. They're going to be successful in value-based care, right? That's where we all fall down. It's that last mile.
Case in point, right? Those vaccine cards didn't help anybody. well, let's since you mentioned it and it started to get its real buzz probably after you had already drafted your book. I mean, not that it wasn't being worked on before, but let's talk about artificial intelligence, right? That started, you know, ChatGPT came out, what was that? It's December 2022. It started to get the hands of the public and everybody, you know, went crazy about it. And so I imagine your book was already drafted by then, or at least well on its way. So since then, since the writing of your book, you know, artificial intelligence has played more and more of a crucial role within modern healthcare. And so I'm wondering, can you provide examples of where you're seeing AI currently improving patient care? And then to the human factors that you were just mentioning before, what ethical or privacy concerns need to be addressed by developers and providers as AI becomes more and more integrated directly into patient care?
Sure. So listen, I am just as excited about AI as everyone. I think that the potential is incredible. I think it's limitless. And I truly believe medicine is going to change over the next few decades as a result, as will many industries. What we have to do is exactly what we did not do with the EHR and exactly what we didn't do with social media. We have to look at AI and understand the human factor. If we're talking about changing care delivery, the more and more we can understand about where biases are baked in, where AI will solve health equity versus make it worse, right, is really critical. And right now, the low-hanging fruit with AI, we're still learning what it can do. It would be a mistake to say that we completely understand it. But right now, there's an incredibly low-hanging fruit that could literally overnight save billions of dollars. So whether it's documentation, prior authorization, clinical decision support, drug discovery, these are the areas to focus on right now. Replacing doctors and nurses with AI, that's not the right place to focus because the technology is not there. And people ultimately dealing with personal issues like their health don't want a robot on the other end of that visit. They want to know that they have a human they can trust, understands them, relates to them, all the things we just talked about culturally. And then, yes, if that doctor, nurse has access to the best technologies like AI to help them with clinical decision, to help them with therapeutic choices, the ability to make a precise decision about their therapy, that's fantastic, right? But the idea that we are going to replace doctors and nurses anytime soon with AI is really just a lot of hype and I think a miss when we are surrounded by low-hanging fruit that really plagues the industry and hinders the industry from good patient care. So I also like to say that, remember, our industry is single-handedly keeping the fax machine alive. So there is a reality here of what is truly happening in everyday medicine and where we got to go.
Hopefully the pagers have paged their last page, but you know, fax machines certainly do still stick around. I think you're spot on. You know, I think patients know that there's going to be value in AI. I think just, you know, from a basic understanding of it, but they still need that human connection in the intimate moment of that clinician and patient encounter.
I mean, you just said it. You're looking for a physician from the LGBTQ community.
That's because, right,
you feel like they'll understand you. Now, if someone said, well, I programmed AI to be LGBTQ friendly, I mean, how do you feel about that?
Knowing how bad ChatGPT is at talking to me generally, it's probably just a bunch of yes queens added in to every time they, you know, kind of respond to me. So that's how I would feel about it. But to your point, I do want my physician to be armed with the best clinical decision support algorithms that are out there to help them come up with their decision faster and more accurately.
And no different than wanting your doc to have the best stethoscope, the best CT scanner, the best MRI, the best facility, the best resources available to them, right? The best pharmacy. I mean, this is just, again, one more tool that we have, an incredible tool at that, but it's not our first time. Da Vinci robots, right? Like, there's so many things. That's the cool thing about medicine is that we are constantly innovating. But to me, we have to be really cautious with the hype versus the reality. To me, it's no different than all of these other tools that we've had for a long time. And they just make us better, faster, smarter docs.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's great. Speaking of like emerging technologies and changes and technical innovation and things like that, last question for you here. You advised a lot of companies at the forefront of the digital transformation in healthcare. So from your perspective, from your vantage point, what are some of the emerging technologies or trends that you think are going to have the most significant impact on the industry within, say, like the next 5 years, AI aside?
Well, AI, of course, that's without any debate. I think that the second and third, close second and third, are the wearable revolution is here to stay. Everyone has a ring, a watch, maybe tomorrow earrings, I don't know, that is measuring everything, right? From heart rate to sleep to mental health. I think that trend will continue. The organizations that can pair that with telemedicine or pair that with actually understanding and interpreting that information, because right now we have consumers measuring a lot of stuff that's actually not very useful. But if you can put it in the hands of a patient with AFib and figure out, you know, do they need to be on blood thinners? Do they not? Or can we simply monitor this in the home? Right. I think that that piece of continuing to move into the home, continue to move to where the consumer is actually experiencing their health, which is not within the hospital. Right. But finding those data points of where does some of this technology bring down the cost and drive the outcome? We're able to ask these interesting questions that we simply didn't have the luxury of before, right? does the time that the amount of time that you sleep, how does that affect your mood and whether you need an antidepressant or not? Right. So to be able to actually change therapies and outcomes and drive down costs, that becomes very interesting as we see more and more things put into a remote patient monitoring environment.
I love, like, there's a couple of different companies out there. We've talked about them on the pod before, for wearable clothing that are sensor enabled, or wearable specific devices that, you know, whether in an inpatient or an outpatient context, can just provide additional data points that AI is reviewing on the back end, because no human could review that much information all at once.
Yes. And drug discovery, I know you said I can't say AI, but the drug discovery piece, I think we are going to quicker, better, faster. I mean, what this is going to do to the therapeutic space is unbelievable. I think it's truly unbelievable. And I think it's going to be, again, among the most impactful. But truly, those are the spaces where I think the biggest change. And I hope to see us do something with regards to mis and disinformation and social media. Again, largely unregulated space, primarily regulated by social media companies at this time. But I think that that will continue to have relevance, either for the good or the bad, is yet to be determined by us and what we as healthcare leaders decide to do.
All right. So the last thing you mentioned a couple times in the books, what it means to do no harm. And you say sometimes doing no harm is, you know, not doing anything, because it might not be the right course of treatment. But sometimes doing no harm is absolutely taking every action that you can. And you say a couple of times, this is one of those times. So what call to action do you have to our listeners, other than go buy Dead Wrong and read it?
Good Amazon review. Good Amazon review.
What call to action might you have for our listeners to help battle misinformation and disinformation?
Sure. Number one, I think that understanding your organization's mis and disinformation strategy, again, I'm not naive, I know that no one has one, but mis and disinformation is tied to the patient engagement strategy, right? It is tied to the patient acquisition retention strategy. It is tied to the value-based care strategy. So these strategies exist within your organization, but I think raising your hand and understanding where is it that you are understanding that you are competing with social media, you are competing with bad tech who doesn't understand culturally where your consumers are, where your patients are. So I think calling it out and understanding it, because chances are there are pockets of it being done within the hospital, likely not in a cohesive C-suite way, but also not being done from the human side, right? To your point, having someone text you, you know, gas queen, it's not really helpful, right? It's a cheap attempt. It's a lazy attempt at understanding a certain population. So I think pressing on that and really pressing on the C-suite engagement. It's not just the chief marketing officer's job. It's not just the CIO's job or the chief medical officer's job. It's really everyone's job. And ultimately, every one of us, whether we're payers, life science companies, tech vendors, it is about the patient. So if you're not hitting this issue, you are missing it. Just like the vaccine, just like making this crazy innovation in healthcare and then not being able to get anyone to take it. That's the miss that we continue to see in different spaces in healthcare.
What a great place to leave us. Thank you so much for that call to action. Geeta, thank you so much for joining us. The book is Dead Wrong, Diagnosing and Treating Healthcare's Misinformation Illness. I have read it cover to cover. Really appreciate it. I also want to just point out something that Dr. G shared with me about it. The illustrations within the book were all drawn by her daughter, whose picture you can see in the book, and they are quite excellent. So thank you for sharing that with me, Geeta, and thanks for joining us here on Tech It to the Limit.
Thank you so much, Elliot. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
And we're out.
Thank you so much. My daughter and a medical student. I didn't know how to throw that in there.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah,
that's okay.
Thank you so much for this, Elliot.
Well, welcome back. Oh my gosh, that was a great interview. A lot of fun to do that interview. But since you weren't there, I want to know, what were your nuggets? What were your hot, steamy, tasty nuggets that you took away from that conversation?
Hot, steamy, tasty nuggets. Well, yeah, it was actually really kind of cool being a fly on the wall for this interview. By the way, I thought you did a great job flying solo. Sad I missed it, but really, really interesting to be almost like a listener this time instead of a host. I loved her call out about needing to make evidence behind medicine snackable. I just loved that word, right? And to tie that into your organization's mis- and disinformation strategy, I did a little bit of research on the side about her quote around 59 million Americans turning to social media for health information, which was shocking, but also not really. In fact, I found an article on Forbes, which we can put in the show notes, that says that 33% of Gen Zers trust TikTok more than doctors, which was, you know, kind of terrifying. But the top 1 in 5 Americans, so it's not just Gen Zers, 1 in 5 Americans reportedly consult TikTok before going to their doctors for treatment advice. And the top reasons that are cited for consulting social media first is accessibility, affordability, and approachability. So everything that you and Dr. G hit on in that conversation of going to where the customer is, I love that nugget that you added in there. And making sure that your mis- or disinformation strategy is integrated with your patient engagement one.
Yeah, that's a great point.
So then my other nugget, I'd say I'm just going to have two. You know, they were big, rather large nuggets. So I just ate two. The human factor, you guys talked a lot about this, kind of making sure that when you're designing any type of innovative solution, any type of technology, not to forget about that last mile of innovation translation, whether it's health tech or vaccines or AI deployment. Your information campaigns need to engage with your end users in culturally competent ways. And if you don't really understand your customer and what's motivating them and what's scaring them and who else is talking to them, then you aren't going to be successful with whatever innovation you're bringing to market. So I just loved the whole discussion, Elliot, and really kind of stoked that our listeners get to hear from you both on season 2, episode 1. Great way to kick off our sophomore year. What were your nuggets?
What were my nuggets? I had a few. It was a fabulous conversation, and she is so personable and enjoyable to have a conversation with. I could probably hang out with her for hours and just chat. I took a couple of different things away from the conversation. I just want to touch on maybe one or two of them here. The first one is actually something we talked about at the top of the show around low-hanging fruit and what you can go after. She mentioned that, you know, low-hanging fruit with regards to healthcare technology, to implementation or selection, doesn't mean replacing doctors and nurses and other clinicians, right? Let's find all the ways that our health system is broken that have nothing to do with direct clinical care, right? Because that's actually what's burdening the people that we have left, is all the other stuff that they've got to do instead of doing clinical care, right? So let's solve for providing the most intimate experience and the most enjoyable experience for patients and providers in that moment, right? So go outside, go into the orchard, pick the apples off the damn ground, because that's where they are, whether it be prior auth or staff scheduling or all kinds of different things that can be implemented that ease clinical care. But don't worry about replacing doctors and nurses. We're so far from that side of it, right? So that was one. The other thing that I thought was interesting, and it wasn't necessarily a nugget that she called out specifically, but just the part of the conversation, was this theme of parallels, both in her book and in our conversation. The first one being the very obvious one between the AIDS epidemic and COVID, which was the whole impetus for her book to begin with, right? We had such misinformation about the AIDS epidemic that many people died from it. And we had such misinformation and intentional disinformation with the COVID pandemic that tons of people died from it that shouldn't have died from it. So I thought that was interesting. But then it also paralleled between the EMR deployment and where we are with AI right now, which I thought was really interesting. What lessons did we learn from the debacle that was the EMR rollout that we can take forward to how we're approaching artificial intelligence and other healthcare technology and combating disinformation and misinformation? And she talks about that in her book. And I thought those parallels were really powerful.
Awesome. I love it.
So listeners, we'd love to hear what your favorite nuggets were from the conversation. So please follow us on LinkedIn, reach out to us, drop a comment, drop a message, follow Tech It To The Limit, visit us online at techittothelimit.fun. listen to us and subscribe to us. Smash that subscribe button wherever you get your pod, whether it be Spotify or Apple Podcasts or anywhere else. Leave us a review. That really helps us with the algorithms. And tell a friend if you liked us. Tell an enemy if you hated us. But for goodness sake, tell someone.
Tell someone.
Someone. Anyone. Sarah, take it away with our health tech haiku for the month.
Eight ball shakes. So wise. Answers in cryptic disguise. ChatGPT's first guys. Well, thanks, Elliot. It was amazing to connect with you again. Can't wait for the rest of season two of Tech It to the Limit.
See you next time.
See you next time.
See you next time.
See you next time.
Tech It to the Limit is produced by Sarah Harper
and Elliot Wilson in consultation with ChatGPT.
Because they are masochists and also don't have any sponsors.
Yet. Music was composed by the world-famous court minstrel Evan O'Donovan.
To consume more hilarious and informative content about digital transformation in healthcare, visit us online at techittothelimit.fun.
And don't forget to follow us on LinkedIn, Twitter, Instagram, and across the event horizon. See you next time on
Tech It to the Limit.